another episode of Technopolitics podcast. In this episode, we'll be chatting with Jan Philipp Albrecht, the co-president of Heinrich Böll Foundation. Jan Philipp was an activist for the Green Party in Germany. He was also a member of the European Parliament. Jan is a data protection specialist. Yes. Thank you very much for greeting us in this interview.
Thank you for the invitation.
Okay. Let's start with a question that's particularly significant for us Brazilians, who have a data protection legislation inspired by the European regulation. Well, the question is, how do you access the implementation of the GDPR after 5 years in effect across Europe?
I think that the most important assessment is that we managed to get data protection on the top of the agenda of all the companies worldwide, which is very good, because before, data protection was a nice to have, which no company, and especially internet companies, really took serious. And now with GDPR, they have to take it serious. There is high fines, which you can get as a sanction when you don't follow it. So that's good. On the other side, it's also clear that a lot of implementation still has to be done. And it needs maybe also a certain number of lawsuits that the principles of data protection are in reality also there for the consumers, for the individual.
Okay. The world today is experiencing greater tension than we did in 2013, when Edward Snowden exposed the United States mass surveillance. With your background as an activist, lawmaker, and former minister, do you believe that the mass surveillance revelation made by Edward Snowden had been surpassed?
I think that these revelations on the mass surveillance, they were very important to get an awareness of all the citizens worldwide to understand what is technically possible for surveillance measures. It wasn't really in the minds of people that such a mass surveillance can take place, and that intelligence services are gathering all the data by the internet companies. So since then, a lot has happened to strengthen data protection and privacy. But nonetheless, one has to say that intelligence services, not only in the US, but worldwide, are amassing data on citizens, and the controls and the legal checks of these measures are very weak. And we see with, for example, Pegasus in other countries like in Greece, also in Europe, spying on opposition or on journalists is taking place with very sophisticated technology. And we have to make sure that there is stronger standards and limits on government surveillance still.
Do you know the case of Pegasus in Europe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Pegasus is used in Europe, and there has been recently an investigation committee of the European Parliament investigating in these activities. And it shows how this technology has been also misused by European governments in order to spy on certain people, even opposition and media. And it's obvious that there need to be further regulation on the use of surveillance technology by intelligence services. There need to be better individual rights in order to assess these measures. And there needs to be also limit for technology. It's obvious that technology is very intrusive today.
Oh, well, a Finnish consulting firm called Tietoevry estimated that 92% of the data generated in the Western Hemisphere is stored in United States. Data is key ingredient of so-called artificial intelligence. What's your view on this concentration of data in one country?
I think if worldwide there would be the same rules and the same laws, and it would be democratically and based on human rights, there would not be any problem with that. But it's not the case. We have very fragmented legal systems. Mm-hmm. And in the US, for example, that's also part of the Snowden revelations, the human rights and fundamental rights of US citizens is far better than those for non-US citizens. So if data is being stored in the United States for certain use, in particular for the use of data for intelligence purposes, there's in a certain extent no legal protection for non-US citizens. And that is obviously a huge problem. And that means that for those efforts, data needs to be stored decentralized. It needs to be stored in particular when it is about sensitive data, in particular when it is about public administration's data on their citizens, then it needs to be stored in the relevant country rather than abroad.
Oh, will the European Union require that its citizen data be located within Europe? What's the current state of this debate? Which groups are in favor of data localization and which are opposed?
We had made a huge step forward with the GDPR because the GDPR is not only setting a high standard for data protection, but it is also saying clearly that data can only be transferred into a third country when the third country provides for an adequate level of protection of fundamental rights for the EU citizens. And this adequate level has not been in place for a long time with the US, but also it has not been in place for many countries of the world. So by these rules, it is required to keep the data in the European Union as long as this level of protection is not there. And in particular, when it is about public authorities, for example, gathering data, they need to make sure that it stays in the European member states. Also because otherwise, very often, they are not able to prove that they process the data in line with their national law. And we need to make sure that this is the case for legal certainty and rule of law.
Okay. Do you view the emergence of movements in various countries for digital sovereignty positively for the control and greater local autonomy of digital technologies?
In my view, the digital rights movement has really done a good job in building a global network and having a global debate also on the most important aspects of civil liberties in a digital environment, of rights-based approach to digitization. And they organize very good in Europe, in America, but also in Asia. There's a lot of groups, even in Africa, we have digital rights groups working together. And I think that this has been a tremendous effort by many activists for over years. But we also see a backlash. While some years ago there was huge civil society meetings also in the Internet Governance Forums and on other places, nowadays We have very close meetings by governments globally, also talking about surveillance, strengthening surveillance, also trying to evade regulation because of economic interests, artificial intelligence, digital platforms, they want them to grow. So I think it's, again, important to get more active for the digital rights movement on a global scale.
Okay. Many companies claim that current AI regulation would inhibit its development. However, we are already aware of numerous extremely harmful and dangerous use and solutions. Are you in favor of regulating artificial intelligence now?
Yes, I think that's very important.
Yes.
We need further regulation. Having said that, of course, we don't know how many artificial intelligence services will look like and how they will be used. So there is a huge uncertainty about the risks and about the needed rules. But nonetheless, we have rules in society. We have basic rights. We have principles, also ethical principles, which need to be debated and where we need to find ways how in a technological development they can be respected. And so we need a real dialogue on concrete regulation in certain sectors. Sector-based solutions on regulation is needed. It's good that we get some first basic framework of risk-based assessment of AI. But it's not sufficient. There will be more rules needed in order to safeguard that AI applications do not undermine the rules we already have and the standards we already have in our lives.
Okay. Many scientists have signed a manifesto against the use of AI in warfare. Is a threat in this regard feasible, or it's already too late?
It's never too late, and I would say if there is political will, you can solve problems in a day, if there's political will of all sides. So you need to get the political will right. And this issue is not new. We have had many years of debate, also driven by the Brazilian government, on automated weapon systems on the international level. Since several years on the United Nations level, these debates were stalled because there was not the secretariat paid for by the United Nations. Some countries did stop the funding for it. And so there was a lost opportunity also in order to get automated weapon systems, also fully automated weapon systems banned. And we now see where it leads to, because in the wars we see in the world right now, automated weapon systems are already used. To be honest, artificial intelligence is already used. When you have a system, for example, like the one which was shooting down the civil airplane in Ukraine several years ago by the Russian military. It was a book system. It works by automated systems. In a second, there is a decision of the rocket to go. So these systems are in place. So it's needed that we have that debate right now to make sure that those systems are not allowed on a solely automated basis. There always needs to be a human decision in, because otherwise we will also get a dehumanized warfare developing more and more, which cannot be in the interest of no one.
Which technological trends now we should encourage?
I think that what we can see is that technological development, also artificial intelligence and automatization, in many regards have huge chances for society. When we see, for example, accessibility not only to the internet and to digital solutions, but to the analog world can be improved by digital technology. When we see how marginalized groups or also language barriers can be addressed with digital technologies, then we can help each other to understand each other, to see each other better. These technologies can help. When we see how we can better organize public transport by digital means, by automated smart solutions, and be better on climate change, for example, on climate protection, then there is huge opportunities to be endeavored in technical solutions. And I also think that many of these solutions can be developed in a way that it respects privacy, mm-hmm. that it's not taking personal data in personalized way all the time, that it's safe also for the use, that it's safe against crime and hate and so on. It can be possible, but we need developers who are trained on that too, and we need standards which create a level playing field on competition on the basis of values.
And which technological trends should we oppose?
I think that the way of creating more and more bubbles in social media in order to better be able to target advertisement is something which is really evil for the future. So we should refrain from deepen that, and we should try to make sure that there is more spaces on social media and on the platforms which is free of advertisement and data analysis driven by the demand for more turnover, more profit. There need to be public spaces which are free from private interests on the digital sphere. And if we are not able to do that, if we are letting every part of our life being commercialized by digital market aspects, then I think we will have a huge problem as a democracy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Jan, for your participation. Thank you for the insights you've provided for us. If you enjoy this episode, please share and subscribe the channel. Stay tuned for the next Technopolitics.